Welcome to New World Notes, a series that explores the gap between the America we want and the America they're trying to make us settle for, and how we the people can reestablish our commonwealth and reclaim our democracy. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. I'm looking at a striking black and white photograph. It shows a line of soldiers. Many of the details indicate World War II, the battle dress, the metal canteens, the round steel helmets, especially the rifles. These are not the handy assault rifles that the Army has used ever since Vietnam. No, these are the World War II workhorse, the M1. Big, heavy, accurate, designed to fire a powerful 30-06 round, lethal out to, well, I don't know how many hundreds of yards. Plenty. In the photo, each rifle is pointed skywards, topped by a bayonet. One feels that if these boys can't drive the krauts out of Palermo, no one can. Except, of course, we're not in Palermo, but in Ohio, at Kent State University, and the troops are from the Ohio National Guard, and the date is May 4, 1970, 39 years ago, Monday. And the only krauts who are going to be killed are named Sandra Scheuer and William Schroeder. The other casualties are Allison Krauss and Jeffrey Miller, plus 9 injured, some of them severely. College students, all. Now, M1s with live ammo and fixed bayonets are unusual tools for crowd control and general peacekeeping. So unusual that only one person in Ohio had the authority to order it, Governor James Rhodes. Rhodes was in a tough Senate race. He was running as the Law and Order God Bless America Teach Those Ungrateful Hippies a Lesson candidate. In 1968, as the Vietnam War raged, Republican Richard Nixon ran for president as the peace candidate. Upon election, Nixon changed his mind. On April 30th, 1970, Nixon announced he had begun his own surge, a big one, into neutral Cambodia. Large anti-war demonstrations erupted all across the country, especially in college campuses, including Kent State. The mayor of Kent asked for and got the National Guard. On May 3, Governor Rhodes arrived in Kent. At a press conference, he denounced Kent's anti-war protesters as the worst type of people we harbor in America, worse than the brown shirts and the communist element. He vowed to use, quote, whatever force necessary to drive them out of Kent, unquote. The students were shot around noon as they were obeying the guard commander's orders to disperse from a lawn called the Commons. When the students were some hundreds of yards away, the commander decided that they had indeed dispersed, and he ordered the troops back to the Commons. On their way back, at the top of a hill, one and only one unit of the guard stopped, turned about face, got into firing position, and, as if on cue, suddenly began firing at the retreating students. They fired 67 shots over a period of 13 seconds, then stopped. To make a long story short, no guardsmen were convicted of any crime. No official, military or civilian, was reprimanded. The media, and hence most of the American public, sided firmly with the flag-waving forces of law and order and against demonstrating students everywhere. Many younger people experienced new depths of outrage, including me, a college student myself, and Jella Biafra, who was still in high school, but quicker to catch on than most. Neil Young's song, Ohio, captured the mood well. Tin soldiers and Nixon coming, we are finally on our own. That second phrase is fine. For me, it captures that sinking feeling in the stomach when you begin to really realize that all the institutions you believed were there to protect democracy, to protect America, to protect you if needed, won't. But there's still hope. There's a we, a community of the disaffected, of the long-haired, of those determined to make love, not war. Not all of our patriotic war dead ever wore a uniform. Those who try to end a vile and immoral war, or prevent one from being launched, are at least as heroic as those who go along, do as they're told, pull the trigger. Just once, I'd like to see a minivan with two magnetic stickers on the back. One sticker would say, "Support our war resistors." The other one, the red, white, and blue one, would say, "God forgive America." I want to play this song in honor of Alison Krauss, Jeffrey Miller, Sandra Scheuer, and William Schroeder, and of the 9 who were injured that day, and of the thousands who afterwards determined to resist rather than acquiesce. After that, we'll hear a good talk by Jella Biafra at Kent State at a memorial rally 4 years ago in May 2005. Jello draws some fine parallels between Vietnam and Iraq, and somehow he manages to end on a note of hope. Here we go.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for sticking around and listening. It is a great and kind of an emotional honor to be here. I'm 44 years old now, but I have pretty vivid memories for how the massacre up over there affected me as a child and beyond. It happened in sixth grade. I was 11 years old, and my teacher came out the day after it happened and praised the National Guard in front of the class. And I, who had already argued with her on many occasions till I kind of threw up my hands at the idea, just said quietly to myself, "This will not stand. Not now. Not for me. Not now. Not ever." And to rub it in, short time after that, it was time for the spring music program to force all the little kids to go into the gym and sing songs for the parents. And our autocratic music teacher decided, in response to the events of the past couple years, we would sing all patriotic songs that spring. But I had a way of getting back at her. I was the worst singer in the class. And in retrospect, the shootings here and at Jackson State and lesser-known ones at Southern University and Greensboro and other places were one of the defining moments of my life. I've been a news hound ever since I was very small. The 6 o'clock news came on after the 5 o'clock cartoons, and I watched both with equal fascination. My favorite characters at the time apparently being Bullwinkle and Senator Everett Dirksen. But this also meant that, when things like the bloody Vietnam War footage, racial riots, the shootings here, the Biafra War in Nigeria, where I got my name, etc., came on TV, my parents didn't change the channel so as not to upset the kids. It was discussed. You know, at a very early age, I knew what racism was, what violence was, what government violence was, what corruption, pollution, etc. was, and why it might be a good idea to oppose this. And across the street from my elementary school, after Kent State, the May 4th massacre, which I believe the protests were in response to Richard Nixon officially widening the Vietnam War into Cambodia, like Rumsfeld recently said he wanted to do in Syria, and other people in the Bush administration, like Richard Pearl, who, like most of the chicken hawks running the war, has never been to war in his life, told a room of Arab journalists in London, "We soon expect to see regime change in Syria, Iran, and Libya." But other people, after the tragic and unwarranted shootings here, also said, "This will not stand." They went on strike at schools across the country, including the one across the street from my elementary school at the University of Colorado in Boulder, someplace where at my parents' place I still have a souvenir student strike band or two from that. They said Americans would not accept this, that our government has gone too far. It is still our country. And that is a valuable lesson, as now all the hype we get around us are, we've won the war in Iraq, see, your protests failed, everything's cool, get with the program. The only way to support our troops is to support the president who put them in harm's way in the first place. But what they are telling you on Fox News and CNN, the wannabe Fox News and the rest, is that the protests against this invasion of Iraq have already been bigger than any of the anti-Vietnam War protests at their peak. But of course, this means there's a lot more to be done when they talk about occupying Iraq for 10 to 15 years. You know, we are Israel, the Iraqis are our Palestinians, and to prove our point, we've already shot over 25 people to death in Iraq for protesting the American presence there. So again, it's time to stand up, as many people already have, again and again and again, and say, "This will not stand." Meanwhile, it's an incredible achievement There was a whole military-industrial complex aiming at the American people with both barrels, the hierarchies of the Democratic and Republican parties aiming at the American people with both barrels. The American people rose up, and we did stop the Vietnam War. We've done it once. We can do it again. Look how quickly we put a stop to King George I, Daddy Bush's Gulf War. He had to get out of there in less than a month, and it wasn't because of the Bush family's deep empathy for human life. I think it was because the protests were getting so big and so fierce so fast, they knew once again, this will not stand. But meanwhile, there's been quite a battle over the years on this very campus just to get some sort of commemoration together so that people will remember what happened. A small kind of out-of-the-way memorial, and at least they blocked off the parking spaces, which much confused the new people who come onto campus each year with the SUV daddy bought them, ready to go to school. Why can't I park here? But hopefully it'll get some people to think. But I was here a year and a half ago as part of an event called the Spitfire Tour with me and a few other speakers. And I came out and talked about how deeply moved I was after how this hit me back in sixth grade, the Kent State Massacre and all that, to be walked through the whole events by Roy Skellinger over here, who remembers it very well, and had given a blow-by-blow sequence. I talked about it to a sea of blank stares in the audience, most of whom were students at this school. Perhaps the reason is that it is officially marginalized is fear of history. People remembering that the American people rose up and that the patriotic Americans were not the ones who blindly supported the president, but the ones who rose up and said the Vietnam War will not stand and we're going to stop it, who cared enough about their country to question the misconduct of our country's own government. Ever since then, during the first Reagan-Bush regime and the corporate-controlled media that was described earlier, we've heard a relentless assault on how awful the 60s really were, how, wasn't Woodstock miserable? You were sitting there in the mud and the rain listening to music instead of making money and babies. What's wrong with you? And all you have to do to derail a decent person running for political office, and they're hard to find these days, is, ooh, that person smoked marijuana once. And now, instead of calling off the drug war and ending ethnic cleansing American style like they should, they're telling us that smoking weed aids Al-Qaeda? What kind of drugs were the brains of our government on when they made that, cooked that up on the stove? But what this leads to is, even when I was in my late 20s, I noticed people my age, a lot of them, even people I grew up with, had no tangible personal memories of Vietnam or even Watergate. And even in fourth grade, everybody in my school had strong, passionate opinions on the Vietnam War. Poof, gone. Watergate. We were 16 by then. It was on everyone's lips. Best soap opera all summer, and it wasn't like Monica Lewinsky. This was real, and Nixon went down, and people don't remember it. So, above all today, now especially people who are younger, hang on to your memories of this event. What brings you to things like this? Don't just remember it 5 days from now, 5 months from now, or even 5 years from now, but 10 years from now. 15 years from now, don't forget who you are or where you came from. Unlike some of the chicken hawks and the Bush mob who were against the Vietnam War, like Paul Wolfowitz, who's an undersecretary to Rumsfeld, and now sees no problems pushing buttons to kill tens of thousands of people just because he thinks it's cool. And this time around, protesting this war, you know, don't believe the hype. We are patriotic Americans, too, because Patriotism means love of country, caring about the people in the country and the environment of the land we live in and how that affects other countries and the land those people live in. Patriotism does not mean giving blind loyalty and a blank check to George W. Bush. And I support our troops, too. The best way to support our troops is to say as loud and as often as possible, bring them home. So don't forget, a little while from now, 3 o'clock, Manchester Field, yet another protest against the war that's been arbitrarily declared illegal. Show up. Applaud the courage of those protesters. The courage to show that real patriotism does mean caring enough to stand against our own government. And fighting against this war and corporate power beyond it doesn't necessarily mean dropping out of school, giving up everything to join the proletariat in the big bad against the big bad fascist pigs. No. Do it anyway, but we can do it in our own way without giving up who we are. A veteran of the movement against the Vietnam War said in his estimation there are only 3,000 to 5,000 full-time shock troops in that decade or so it took to stop it. The rest were just people who showed up when they could, pitched in when they could, and that still wasn't 51% of a country of what was then 220 million people, but it was enough to get the job done. The most patriotic thing we can do right now is to make sure that the war on terrorism, especially the war in Iraq, is shortened as soon as possible, and we bring those troops home and take a long, hard look at how our foreign and corporate policies caused terrorism in the first place. But unlike last time, we don't have access to the airwaves and the TV. They aren't showing what really goes on in war. They're having right-wing pundit debate ultra-right-wing pundit with a few video game-type graphics to show us that's the news. And here's a quote. Campus protesters are, quote, worse than the brown shirts and the communist element and also the night riders and the vigilantes. They're the worst type of people we harbor in America. I think we're up against the strongest, well-trained, militant, revolutionary group that has ever been assembled in America. I don't know whether I applaud quite that mentality or not, frankly, but guess who said that? Fox News, right? CNN? NBC? Owned by General Electric? This was Ohio Governor James Rhodes. A day or two before he called out the National Guard and people were killed on this campus. He went down. He lost the primary election the next day and the Vietnam War went down, but this kind of mentality is now official policy on the airwaves. So don't hate the media. Become the media. One-on-one, at home, at school, work, family, wherever, you find people spouting the official James Rhodes, Rush Limbaugh, George W. Bush, our unelected president-select BS. Don't tune them out as being unreachable. Sit down and talk to them. One by one, this is how we turn the tide. Forgive the flags. We do have First Amendment rights in this country, and some people put them up not because they were racist or warmongers, but because they felt sympathy for the innocent people killed on September 11th. Even flag people will sit up and listen when you present the war in this light. What we're doing over there is rock-bottom, terrible military strategy. Every time we blow people up in the Middle East, we are planting the seeds for more Osama bin Laden, more al-Qaeda's, more suicide bombers, thus making our own country and our own lives less and less and less safe. That is poor military strategy. My girlfriend who's here tonight has a stepmother who I haven't met, who apparently is so rah-rah Republican, she's devoted a wing of her trophy home outside Columbus, Ohio, to a political and Republican Party museum with Reagan memorabilia, George Bush the First knickknacks, vintage editions of every American flag ever made. But at Christmas time, 2001, after September 11th, when she pointed out, even to this woman, why the war on terrorism, especially pouring gasoline on the fire and trying to occupy Iraq, is poor military strategy, even that woman looked up and said, you know, that's a good idea. As they say in showbiz, let's roll. We can't wait for Democrats to do this for us. They had their chance in the 2002 election. They rolled over and played dead. Didn't even challenge the war or the fact that Bush stole the 2000 election. It's up to us. We've done it before. We can do it again. We are the ones who are patriotic. We are the ones who support the troops in the most constructive way to get them out of there before they come home with Gulf War syndrome. Don't forget who you are. Don't forget where you came from. Don't hide reality from your children when tragic events come on TV. Discuss it with them so they become more conscientious, intelligent adults who don't forget. Hang on to your spirit, your memories. Don't give up. Thanks for listening.
And thank you, dear listener, for listening on this 39th anniversary of the Kent State Massacre by the Ohio National Guard's own goon squad, May 4, 1970. Jello Biafra just explained better than I could why Kent State still matters, how it provides lessons, and more importantly, hope, that can help us in our own gloomy times. Apologies for my lying to you about how old Jello was in 1970. As he noted, he was not in high school, but in sixth grade. As I said, the kid was and remains sharper than most. For the recording of Jello's talk, many thanks to Vincent at Blast Furnace Radio. The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the views of anyone even remotely connected with the station. Also, these opinions are protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Last I heard, the First Amendment has not yet been abolished, unlike the Fourth. See you next week for some more New World Notes.
Mother Earth will swallow.